Anyhow, well, anyhow, so it's good to see you. A friend of mine, and like I said, I think I showed this picture before, a friend of mine that was a guy that had a big influence in my life years ago, and he was, the thing he did that to me was so great was in everyday experience, he would always kind of see God moving. And I remember being in, he was a adult Sunday school class teacher, and I would go to his class, and he would tell what God was doing in their family, at his work, and this place and that place. And the thing that struck me about it was, wow, I mean, God is doing amazing things in his life. And then what happened to me after a while was, wait a second, God's doing amazing things in my life too. And a lot of it's just spotting what God's doing in your life. And a lot of times we're not really on the lookout. One of the things that when he passed away a couple years ago, his son posted a picture of his Bible. He did read his Bible rather often. And I don't think he changed them out very often either. Because I've worn out a few, but nothing like that. And but anyhow, he was a great guy. We're going to continue on with our story of Joseph. We've had a few weeks off. So I'm just going to give you a little quick recap, and especially we have a few people here who I know weren't here for the first five messages on Joseph. So we're just going to give you a little quick recap where we are. Joseph, there was a man named Jacob. He had 12 sons. Of the 12, the 11th was his favorite. His name was Joseph, and he made him special by giving him a special coat of many colors that really showed it to everybody else. His brothers were jealous. And then on top of that, Joseph had some dreams that God showed him that the brothers one day would bow down to him. And his father and mother would, his father and everybody else would bow down to him too. And that kind of bugged him a little bit. And so being bugged a little bit, he went to see how they were doing on their sheep watching. And they decided to kill him. So I guess they were a bit bugged. But then cooler heads prevailed. And instead of killing him, they decided we could get some money, so they sold him into slavery to some people who were going by. He ended up in the house of Potiphar, an official in Egypt. And as a slave in the household, God's blessing was on him, and he eventually rose to over the whole household. And then Potiphar's wife spotted him, and she made advances toward him. And when he repelled her, she accused him of trying to rape her. So then Potiphar threw him into jail. In jail, again, he rose to the surface. God's blessing was on him. And at that time, two of the king's officials came into the prison, and he interpreted their dreams. One dream was that, basically, I'm not going to give you the whole dreams. That was another sermon, which we're not going to do again. But basically, one dream was such that he was going to be restored in 3 days, and the other one was such that he was going to be hanged in 3 days. Both things came about. The guy who was being restored to the king's cupbearer, the right-hand man of the king, he said, when I'm there, I'll remember you. Or at least Joseph said, hey, when you're there, will you remember me? And he was restored, forgot about Joseph. Joseph spends 2 more years in prison. One day, the Pharaoh has a dream that really shakes him up. All of his wise men cannot interpret the dream. At that point, the cupbearer remembers him and says, oh, there was this guy in prison that told us about our dreams. And he told me I was going to be restored. He told the baker he was going to be hanged. And both things happened. So the king calls him up. He tells Joseph the dream. Joseph explains that the dream means there's going to be 7 fat years or 7 very prosperous years with great harvest and everything going well. And then 7 lean years or 7 years of famine. And so what they need to do is save up grain during the 7 good years to survive the 7 bad years. And the king goes, that sounds great. And so I'm putting you in charge of everything. So now Joseph has gone from favorite son, least favorite brother, slave, accused, prison. He's now basically the head of Egypt. The Pharaoh doesn't really run it. Joseph is running it. He's running Egypt. He's organizing the grain saving and sales and all that. So where we are today is we're going to go back to Canaan with his dad, his brothers. The famine has hit. They've had their 7 good years. Now they're into the bad years. And so that's where we're going to pick up the story. So when Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy the grain for us there, that we may live and not die." So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to Egypt to buy grain in Egypt. So they left there. And he said, "Behold, but Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him." He had two special sons, Joseph and Benjamin. Benjamin and Joseph were brothers from the same mother. And when Benjamin was born, Joseph's and Benjamin's mother died in childbirth. And so he had these two special sons, and he wasn't going to send him down there. Something's going to happen to him. So they go, they head down from Canaan over to Egypt. And thus the sons came to Israel, the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was one, the one who sold to all the people the land. Now, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. "Where do you come from?" he said. They said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Now, if you think about this, there's probably a good reason for them not recognizing him. It says that they sold him as a slave when he was 17. He was taken out of prison by Pharaoh when he was 30. 7 years have passed of the good years, and now they're into the famine years. So he's at least 38, maybe more like 40, until it got bad enough that they're trying to figure out where to get food. So he's between 38 to 40, probably. They sold him as a 17-year-old as a slave. He's in a position now, like, first of all, how would you possibly imagine that your younger brother that you sold as a slave 20 years ago is now the guy that you're going to see? So they didn't. And plus, he's speaking Egyptian. He's dressed like an Egyptian. There's no way they're going to see this. In fact, it's going to mention. So then Joseph recognized his brothers, and Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them, where they bowed down to him. And he said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." They said to him, "No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies." And he said to them, "No, it is the nakedness of the land that you've come to see." And they said, "No, we are your servants, our 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more." But Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested, by the life of Pharaoh. You should not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." And he put them all together in custody for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God." He's like, after he's thinking about it for a few days, he's like, they're over there. I'm going to hold all of them. And he knows what he's doing anyhow. So he says, where are we here? Oh, this is one. "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody. And let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your household. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. So, okay. And they said to one another, "In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us, and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us." And Reuben answered them, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy?" Now, Reuben is the oldest brother, so it's his, contractual obligation to tell them, "I told you so." Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood. And they did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. They're sitting here talking right in front of Joseph in Hebrew language. He's totally understanding. It's their brother, but he's speaking to them through an interpreter from Egyptian to their language. So they're not recognizing. They don't think he knows anything they're saying. He turned away from them and wept, and he returned to them and spoke to them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. And Joseph gave order to fill their bags with grain and to replace every man's money in his sack and give them provision for the journey. This was done for them. So, and they loaded their donkey with their grain and departed. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. He said to his brothers, "My money has been put back. Here is the mouth of my sack." At this, their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" It's funny how they get their money back and they're thinking, "What is God doing to us?" So they get, here we go. So when they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, The Lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us to be spies of the land. But we said to him, "We are honest men. We have never been spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan." Then the man, the Lord of the land, said to us, "But by this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me and take the grain for the famine of your household and go your way. Bring your youngest brother to me. Then I shall know that you are not spies but honest men. I will deliver your brother to you, and you shall trade in the land." And they emptied their sacks, and behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were afraid. They're like, "Oh, he thought we were spies. Now he's going to think we're thieves too, and we cheat him." Oh, there's the money. Oh, sorry, I didn't hit the swipe. Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more. And now you would take Benjamin? All this has come against me." Then Reuben said to his father, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol," or that means to the grave. I'd die. And so you could imagine that this conversation is kind of getting a little bit warmed up. You know what I'm saying? They're upset because, "Look, Dad, the only way we're going to get more food is if we go down there. And we have to take Benjamin." You're not taking Benjamin. You already lost Joseph. And now Simeon's not here. You're going to take another one? No. That's not going to happen. So chapter 43. Now the famine was severe in the land. And when they'd eaten the grain they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again, buy us a little food." But Judah said to him, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" Okay, the food's gone. "Hey, go back and get some more." "No, we can't go back. You have to go back." "No, we can't go back. You have to go." You know, I can just imagine family life was not fun right there at that point. "If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" And Jacob basically at this point says, "Why'd you tell him there was another brother?" And they go, "Well, he asked a lot of questions. Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother? How could we know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down here'?" And Judah said to Israel, his father, "Send the boy with me and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I will be a pledge for his safety. From my hand you will require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would have returned twice. It's like, look, Dad, I'll be responsible. I'll take him. If anything happens to him, it's my fault. And you know what? We're out of food now, but if we would have just taken care of this early on, we could have been back there and back twice. Then their father Israel said to them, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the man, a little balm, a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight. Take also your brother and arise and go again to the man. May God Almighty grant you mercy before the man, and may he send back your other brother and Benjamin. As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. You know, there's a point to where things get bad enough you kind of have to give up. And this is what it is. Like, there's no food. We're going to starve to death. Well, I don't want to lose Benjamin. But on the other hand, we're going to lose everything. And I have to, you know, it's amazing how we get to a point where all we can have is, you can just trust God. And really, the sooner we get to that point, the better. And so the men took his present, and they took the double of money with them and Benjamin, and they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the steward of his house, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon. The man did as Joseph told him and brought the men to the house. And the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house. And they said, is it because of the money which was replaced in our sacks the first time that we are brought in, so that he may assault us and fall upon us and make us servants and seize our donkeys? Like, they're afraid. They're like, what is going on here? Why is he bringing us to his house? And he found out that we stole his stuff. Here we go. Hit my off button. So they went up to the steward of Joseph's house and spoke with him at the door of the house and said, oh, my Lord, we came down the first time to buy food. And when we came to the lodging place, we opened our sacks, and there was each man's money in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight. So we have brought it again with us, and we have brought other money down with us to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks. And he replied, peace to you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money. Then he brought Simeon out to them. And when the man had brought the men into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given them their donkey fodder, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, and they heard that he should eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the presents that they had with them and bowed down to the ground. So they brought all the nuts and pistachios and dates and almonds and other stuff that they had. And he inquired about the welfare and said, is your father well? The old man of who you spoke, is he still alive? They said, your servant, our father is well. He is still alive. And they bowed their heads and prostrated themselves. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? God be gracious to you, my son. And then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother. And he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber, and he wept there. And then he washed his face and came out and controlled himself and said, serve the food. And they served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination to the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement. Like, if you think about what just happened, they sit him down. Okay, Reuben, Simeon, Judah, down the line to Benjamin over here. How do you get us, you know, there's 11 brothers there. How do you put us all in order by age and rank? That's kind of interesting, isn't it? They're looking at each other, this seems like something's happening here, but they still have no idea. Portions were taken from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portion was 5 times as much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. Okay, everybody's got plenty, but wow, they put like a huge pile of food in front of Benjamin. Okay, whatever. Genesis 44. Then he commanded the stewards of his house, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. And put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest, with his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph told him. Okay. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys. They had gone only a short distance from the city. Now Joseph said to his steward, up, follow after the men. And when you overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is it not from this that my Lord drinks, and by this that he practices divination? You have done evil in his sight. And when he overtook them, he spoke to them these words. They said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it for your servants to do such a thing. We didn't steal anything. We didn't take anything. We brought the money back. We brought extra money, so we bought everything. Behold, the money that we found in the mouth of our sacks was brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from your Lord's house? Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be your Lord's servants. He said, let it be as you say. He who is found with it shall be my servant. The rest of you shall be innocent. Then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each opened his sack. And he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending at the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack, and they tore their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned to the city. And Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, and he was still there. They fell before him to the ground. Joseph said to them, what deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination? And Judah said, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? Or how can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and also in whose hand the cup has been found. But he said, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father. So he says, look, I'm just going to take the one who had the cup. Benjamin, we'll take him. The rest of you are free to go. And Judah went up to him and said, oh, my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant. For you, like Pharaoh himself, my Lord, ask his servants, saying, for you are like Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servants, saying, have you a father or a brother? And he said to my Lord, and we said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me, that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. Then you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you shall not see my face again. And when we went back to your servant, my father, we told him your words, the words of my Lord. And when our father said, go again, buy us a little food, we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother goes down with us, then we will go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless our younger brother goes with us. Then your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me 2 sons. One left me, and I said, surely he has been torn to pieces, and I have never seen him since. And if you take this one also from me, and harm happens to him, you will bring down my gray hairs in evil in Sheol. Now, therefore, as soon as I come to you to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die. And your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with the sorrow of Sheol, or the grave. For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant to my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. Then Joseph could not control himself. Before all those who stood by him, he cried, make everyone go out of the room. So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud. So the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. It's like, I'm just imagining the brothers. He gave him a punch in the gut that, like, what? You're Joseph? So Joseph said to his brothers, come near me, please. And they came near, and he said, I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves, because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and Lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry, go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children and your children's children and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. And there I will provide for you, for these are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. And now your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell your father and all my honor. Tell my father of all my honor in Egypt and of all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck, and he kissed him, kissed all of his brothers and wept upon them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. And when the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, Joseph's brothers have come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go back to the land of Canaan, and take your father and your household and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the land. And you, Joseph, are commanded to say, do this, take wagons from the land of Egypt, for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come and have no concern for your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. And so Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. To each and all of them he gave a change of clothes. But to Benjamin he gave 300 shekels and 5 changes of clothes. To his father, he sent as follows, 10 donkeys loaded with good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and provisions for his father on the journey. I think it was actually 20 donkeys. I only had room for 10. Then he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the way. I can just hear him. He's like, look, they're going to start on the road, and they're going to go, well, if you wouldn't have sold him, well, it was your fault. It was your idea to kill him. No, just stop all that. Just go back home and tell Dad. So they went up out of Egypt, and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. And they told him, Joseph is still alive and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. What? What are you saying? And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them. And when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. He's like, no, I'm going. Like, I'm 100 and whatever years old. I don't care. Joseph's there. I'm going back. And I was kind of thinking about how so much of life that we live is really, it's kind of like we live a story. That's a great story. I love that story. I don't usually read four chapters on Sunday morning. You guys, if you've been here more than once, you know that. But I was thinking about the whole point of, you know, what, like, God is writing stories every day. My friend Anton, you know, that he would always see God working in his life. And really, when you start looking, God's working in your life. God's working in my life. God's working at the chapel at Grossmont. God's work. Look, God has a story. And I just have a couple. I was thinking about this. The story that God's writing hit the chapel at Grossmont. The story he's writing in East County, San Diego, California, United States, the world. And really, the question is, what? I got three questions that just to kind of think about today. What role do you play? Like in God's overall story of what he's doing on the earth today, what's your role? Where do you fit in? If it's a play, you know, there's all kinds. I know one of the announcements today is Jeffrey's in a play, and it's about, he's the Beast, I believe, in Beauty and the Beast. And so that's a role. That's one of the key roles. But you know what? There's a lot of people that make a play happen. There's people that run the curtains up and down, somebody with music, somebody this. There's other players who do different things. Everybody's got a part to make it all happen. And in the story that God is writing here today, we all have a part. I mean, the first part is, hey, do I know Jesus? That's the first step to be part of the play. But he's still working. And we when we see, look, God's doing something here. How? What can I do to be part of it? Oh, and then God can like show us, like, wow, here's something I could do. Here's some the like I said yesterday. The ladies had a really nice lunch tea thing. You know what? There are a lot of different parts to play, and there are a lot of them were played. So I'm not going to go into details because I don't really know who did what part. But and then the question is about our growth too. God's writing this story, and in this story, one of the main themes of the part you play is growth. Like, how are you growing? And I was kind of thinking about Joseph. And there was a lot of growth that went on in Joseph's life through this whole story up to this point. We have one more installment in the life of Joseph. That'll be next week. And we're going to finish out this thing. But, you know, from being the son who was the favorite, oh, that's really cool. And then kind of telling his dreams to his brothers and getting thrown in prison and being faithful. You know, like there's a lot of opportunities along the way for Joseph to learn to trust God more. In each step of the way, he passed the test. And honestly, I believe that in a lot of ways, the hardest test he faced was when his brothers came back and they roll, you know, he's got people trying to buy grain from him. And here comes the brothers. Oh, wait, these are the guys who 20 years ago were first trying to kill me. Then they decide they're going to sell me as a slave. And now they're coming in here begging for grain. And, you know, he worked through that whole process. Well, he could have just said, no, get out of here. Or he could have done a lot of things. But what he did is he set up a test for him. Well, he talked a little rough. Well, what about your dad? What about your brother? Asked a bunch of questions, get them to commit. Then when he's going to get the brother, are they going to treat Benjamin the same way they treated me? They treated me. They sold. If it would have been me, they would have said, yeah, take him. We'll get out of here. No, I'll take his place. And I think the big lesson from Joseph in his life here is, you know what? And he recognized, look, God brought me here. You didn't bring me here. You didn't make me come here. God made me come here. And we put God as the ultimate cause of what's going on in our story. All of a sudden, instead of like blaming other people and thinking it's everything else is everybody else's fault, we start going, no, God, what are you doing in this? What do you want me to learn? How can I grow? What do you have for me? And then obviously the brothers had done some growing along the way too. They recognized, look, this is going to totally break Dad's heart to lose Benjamin. I'll stay. And it's interesting to me that Judah is the one that stays. Judah is the one that eventually from his line comes Jesus Christ. And he's willing to offer himself for his brother. I'll be a slave. I'll stay here. I'll be your servant. Please, please, please let me take the boy's place. And then the third thing, to go along with the question, you know, how are you growing? I don't know what you're doing. They're facing some things, but here's the impossible situations that you face. And you know, they were in this situation. They learned to be more humble. But then also, Jacob, when they told him that Joseph was still alive, like he couldn't talk. He couldn't, what? Huh? I get the feeling it's like one of those things that they said, hey, by the way, Joseph's still alive. And Jacob's like, what'd you say? Huh? And you know, it's sometimes God does things that are just absolutely like 1 minute before that, not only did you think it was impossible, it had left your mind from the realm of possibility. Like Jacob had given up on Joseph. I mean, he's been gone 20 some years. He's been gone, you know, at least 21, 22 years, something like that. And he counted him as dead 20 years ago. And he'd given up the whole thing. And then he's saying, whoa, whoa, wait a second. What? What are you saying? Joseph is alive. No. But what did you really say? Joseph is alive. And look, this is what he said. This is what he sent. It's here. He's there. We couldn't believe it either. It was impossible. But see, you're facing some situation. Maybe it's something you've already given up on. And it's impossible. Maybe you think, man, that water's gone under that bridge. That ship sailed. That train left the station. Whatever metaphor, that airplane left the airport. You know, the car's out of the garage. Whatever you want to call it, right? It's over. It's gone. It's done. You know what, God? Not necessarily. You see, God sees a lot of things that you don't see. God sees all. God knew what was going on this whole time. Joseph, well, you can imagine, Joseph sold as a slave. Well, this is horrible. How could this possibly be good? I don't know. Well, then you get accused. Well, how can this be good? Thrown in jail. Well, every step led him to this point that was the fulfillment of his dream vision that he'd had of all the brothers coming in and bowing down to him. It only got to that through all this other stuff that you just thought wouldn't happen. And in your life and my life, there are steps going on where we think this can't do anything. What that dream is, it had died. It's long gone. It's never going to happen. You don't know that. Maybe. But maybe not. Maybe, maybe not. Listen, it comes down to this. Figuring out what role you play. God's doing something. What's your part? Are you a bit player? Are you a star? Are you working the backstage thing? Are you, you know, I don't know what you're doing. Figure that out. And then through that whole process, let God just accept that God is God. And let him work in your life and learn what it means to take the next step. The next step. The next step. I love that picture of in Psalms that says the word is a light to your feet and a lamp to your path. In the picture of being out in a dark place at night and you've got a little lamp and you can just see to take the next step. You can go all kinds of places, but only one step at a time. And God knows where you're going. There's just so many things you don't know. that you just have to trust God. It just always is that way. And you know what? As you start leaning on God and growing, there'll be some situation that you right now have written off as absolutely impossible. And you'll see God move and God work and God do something that you believe could never happen. Listen, I know that God is doing a great thing here. I'm so thankful for everybody that's here. I'm so thankful for all the people that I sense your love and encouragement and support. And I am so blessed by the interconnectedness and how people help and love and bless each other. And as we stay humble and we ask God to show us a role and we ask God to help us grow, then you know what? God will do impossible things. And I just want to encourage you. I love that story. When I came in this morning, Billy had looked at the bow, looked at the back of the bulletin and goes, "You got 42 through 45? Are you doing four chapters today?" I'm like, "Yep." I don't normally do it that way. You guys know that. But listen, God is doing God did an amazing work then. God is doing an amazing work now. We just have to wait and see what it is. Let's be part of it. Let's pray. Father, we thank you. We praise you. We ask your blessing. We thank you. I thank you for the story of Joseph. Thank you for for each person here. And I pray, Father, that we would have the humility to ask, to in whatever situation, to ask the question, Lord, what are you doing here? Lord, what do you want? Lord, how can we be part of this? And then, Lord, I pray that as we reach a point in our lives where we see your hand move in amazing ways, Lord, that at that point we would still give you all the credit, all the honor, all the glory, and that we would not be overcome by any success thinking that it's us, but we would recognize that it's you. We thank you, we praise you, we ask your blessing. I pray for everybody that's here today that you would use your word to speak to our hearts, that we would come to you, recognize that just as Joseph forgave his brothers, Lord, that you, through Jesus, want to forgive us, and that we would put our hope